anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi voiced her support on Thursday for lowering the federal voting age to 16, telling reporters during her weekly press conference that doing so would be a boon for voter engagement in the United States.
Myself have always been for lowering the voting age to 16. I think it's really important to capture kids when they're in high school, when they're interested in all of this, when they're learning about government, to be able to vote.
General Caldwell is a Republican strategist and Fox News contributor. He's not a big fan of this idea.
Looney Tunes has become one of the favorite programs of 16-year-olds, and Looney Tunes is what the Democratic Party has become, especially with a measure which you know is used to get more power, as you know they usually do. The fact of the matter is the voting age was lowered only after Eisenhower said that, hey, if these folks are old enough to fight at 18, they should be old enough to vote. And then there was a Voting Rights Act of 1965 in which Nixon signed into law, which the Supreme Court then declared unconstitutional. And the Supreme Court was ratified with the 26th Amendment, given that right. I think there's a difference between folks that are willing to put their lives on the line for our country and vote and have that 18-year-old provision than those who still need help from mom when they're being told to brush their teeth.
Saturday night's Powerball jackpot is approaching $500 million. That makes it one of the top 25 jackpots in U.S. history. Please remember you can find us on Facebook at USA Radio. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Did you know that one in five people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. We are in an era where we are constantly bickering. We have those on the right who are angry. We have those on the left who are angry. We are going back and forth. We seem to talk past one another constantly. We have our own websites. We have our own social media. We have essentially our own dedicated cable channels. And it's a very difficult time to patch things up. Some people, however, are trying, and Sally Cohn is one of them, We're going to be speaking to her today. Her new book is The Opposite of Hate, A Field Guide to Repairing Our Humanity. Sally, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
How did we arrive at this low state? I mean, we can talk about Donald Trump, but it really started before then, didn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's I don't know. I have some theories of how we got here, right? It has it's about a combination of the nature of the media environment that we're in, the political environment. Like, politics in modern, the last 50 or 60 years have actually deliberately stoked anger and animosity among people as a turnout strategy. Both parties have done it. The Republicans have done it a bit more, and made it a core strategy to, stoke hatred and fear and resentment. The media took on a lot of that, both because of changes in policy and because of more competition. They saw they could, look, they now they need more audiences more, and one way to get audiences more is to have more fights. So there's that too, and then of course this all happens in the context of the fact that we're have a pretty hateful history as a country. It's not like hate, divisiveness, otherizing is anything new to us.
No, that's a very good point. It unfortunately, I think, comes to us kind of naturally. And there really hasn't been, I don't think, any single moment where we've stepped back, looked at ourselves, examined what we've done, and thought about, what do we really do? I mean, maybe the 60s came close, but it wasn't a really, really thoroughgoing moment where, for example, like in South Africa, you had a Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Sure.
I think we almost need that in the United States, but where do you start? Because there's so many issues on which you could begin that.
Well, even just having that conversation is interesting because it acknowledges that we have the residue and scars of the hate in our past that are still impacting us as people and as a country today. And so if we get to the point of then saying, okay, what do we do about it? How do we move forward? At least we've acknowledged that's a reality and a problem, whereas we're still honestly fighting over that. There are a lot of people who want to say, like, look, that's the past. It doesn't matter now. But when you look at the inequity in our schools and our communities and in policing and in wealth and in home ownership and at every single layer, and you see those inequities play out by race, by gender, by immigration status, by religion, by sexuality, you know that is because that residue of hate has left its thumbprint on our society and all of us.
We're speaking with Sally Cohn. She's the author of The Opposite of Hate, A Field Guide to Repairing Our Humanity. It's all well and good for you and I to sit here, Sally, and talk about, you know, what we ought to do and what we have to acknowledge. But as you alluded to a moment ago, there are plenty of people who don't acknowledge that there's even really an issue to begin with. How do we approach folks like that?
Well, I think the key thing is first to talk to people in a way that doesn't stop them listening. And, you know, look, and I'm not telling people what to do. I'm saying what personally for me works and what I've found to be my own journey. And if you are in a situation with someone where you feel politically confrontational with them or ideologically or, you know, obviously people have to make choices that are about their own safety, their own self-care. So, you know, one option is certainly to just not engage. If you are going to engage, if you do feel like you can engage, I think it's important to engage in ways that people can hear you. Because when we just start yelling at people, and when we just start trying to, you know, attack their opinion with our opinion, or worse, when we start to actually attack them as people, when we make it personal, then they, not only is that mean, but they don't listen. People don't listen because people don't like being told they're stupid or they're hateful or they're this or they're that. So at the very least, beginning things in a, trying to have conversations that at a core, at a base, have mutual respect and respect for each other's humanity is critical.
I don't know if you found this personally in your experience, but one thing that has guided me when I have attempted to do this sort of thing is when you're trying to engage someone that you may differ from significantly, politically, culturally, etc., don't do it online. It is much easier not to listen online. It's just structurally so much more difficult to get through to someone, and I find that all the conversations that I have had in person, directly, engage the humanity. People are more polite in person. People like can see your person with a face and a body and a real human being, and that means something. It's significant to people, even if we don't think about it.
Yeah, that's true. Sure, and one of the things I cover in the book is some of the research on why it is that technology, social media can be inherently dehumanized. However, there's also examples of how people have reached across differences, shown kindness, generosity, humanity in the face of cruelty in ways online that have radically transformed people and helped them move away from extreme hate. And the truth is, you know, the book's called The Opposite of Hate, and the opposite of hate to me isn't love. You don't have to love people to not hate them. You just have to not hate them. And what the antidote really is connection. Because when you know people, when you have experienced your mutual humanity, it is harder to hate them. And one of the things that's amazing about the internet and amazing about social media is that it brings us this potential to know and care more about and understand wider circles of people than we may have in our own homes, our own schools, our own workplaces. That's also a potentially great tool for fighting hate. It depends on how we use it.
Well, I guess then that even if it means spending more time on Facebook or Twitter, I'm going to have to reread that section of the book and give it a little extra effort, because I suppose there are only so many people that I can reach in person, and it's important to keep as many connections in digital and analog both. We've been speaking with Sally Cohn. She is the author of The Opposite of Hate, A Field Guide to Repairing Our Humanity. Sally, thank you so much for being with us and for making this effort. All the best.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
I'm Will Flitzer in the Situation Room, and you're listening to Now It's the News with Derek Blair.
Wouldn't it be great to see your windows in a whole new light? Do it right. Call your local neighborhood experts. Budget Blinds. You'll get beautiful style and personalized service for every budget. We bring the showroom right to your home, so you can choose from hundreds of blinds, shades, shutters, and drapes. Plus smart home window coverings you control with the touch of a button. And with Budget Blinds, we do it all for you. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy. There's a reason why Budget Blinds is the number one provider of custom window coverings in North America. When we say we have style and service for every budget, we really mean it. So let's get your home a whole lot of gorgeous. Get your free consultation right at home. Just go online to budgetblinds.com or call 855-BUDGET-BLINDS. Call 855-BUDGET-BLINDS for your free consultation right at home. Now that's beautiful. at participating independently owned and operated franchises only. Ask for details.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare, and MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is around $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 855-90-BIBLE. That's 855-90-BIBLE. 855-90-BIBLE.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody just...
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. I have always been fascinated by the English language and, in particular, by British mannerisms of speech. Perhaps I have a little bit of Henry Higgins in me. Well, we're going to dig deeper on that front today. We're speaking with Lynn Murphy. She is the author of the blog Separated by a Common Language and the book The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. Lynn Murphy, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Sure thing. So what was your first experience as an American encountering the Queen's English in its native land?
In its native land? Well, it was just 18 years ago. I moved to England to take a job at the University of Sussex, and that was my first time in England, there with all of my worldly belongings, moving there to stay.
But I had lived in South Africa for 4 years before that and had started to learn some of the lingo.
And I suppose it's a separate question. What's the difference between the lingo in South Africa, let alone the accent, versus England? But what did you notice as an American? What did you most experience difficulty or at least shake your head a little bit at when you first started speaking with folks on a regular basis there?
Well, I think once you really live in a culture rather than just being a tourist in it, you have a lot of administrative vocabulary that you need. A lot of, the bureaucracies
right.
are all different.
Right.
So you do a lot of learning what the terms are for different departments that you need to talk to and different documents you need to have and
right.
boring stuff like that. South Africa has got some of its own lingo. So, for instance, a traffic light is a robot there.
Oh, wow.
And there's some other fun things coming from other languages there and a lot of different accents. So I was, in South Africa they use British spelling and they use a lot of the words like biscuit instead of cookie or pavement instead of sidewalk or things like that. So those kinds of things I was prepared for, but there were also a lot of differences.
I know that there are a lot of transplants on both sides of the Atlantic, especially between New York and London, a lot of professional exchange, certainly between those cities at the very least. Do you think that there is more of a language shock for an American coming to England or for a Brit coming to New York? And what are their respective experiences in, as far as you've been able to tell?
Well, I think British people hear a lot more American voices than Americans hear of British voices. So there's a lot more American TV, a lot more American music playing there than vice versa. So they come expecting to be able to communicate fairly well and, of course, knowing some of the lingo already. But I'm sure they're surprised by a lot of the things that they don't know. I've been doing a difference of the day on Twitter since 2009, and I mostly do a different difference every day. I've done thousands of differences. So you will just keep learning more and more and more the longer you live in one of these places.
We're speaking with Lynn Murphy. She is the author of The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. You are married to a Brit. Are there still moments where one of you doesn't know what the other one is talking about?
Yes. I mean, some of it I think is down to stubbornness at this point. But
I know that's true. My wife and me, and we both speak American.
Yesterday he was complaining about, when he asked me a question, do you want to do this? And I say, sure. And he'll say, I don't know what sure means. I'm like, I've told you 1,000 times it means yes. But he takes it as, resisting. So, those kinds of little interactional things, the way that British people and American people make suggestions can be a bit different. Mm-hmm. And so, he can sort of bristle at me sounding a bit bossy compared to how he'd want to put things. So, there's those kinds of things. But, we're aware of them. We get past it.
Well, that's an interesting observation there. To what extent are those cultural attitudes embedded in the language, or are they just a product of the language more than the culture? I suppose in a way it's a chicken and egg question. Are Brits are Brits really hyper polite, and are Americans really bossy and rude? I mean, how does they're obviously
you can't really judge it that way,
right?
Because what sounds bossy in America doesn't sound bossy in Britain and vice versa. So nothing in the language is inherently bossy. It's what you're used to hearing and the conditions you're used to hearing it in make things seem bossy. So, for example, British people say please a lot more than Americans do, at least twice as much more. And they do it in situations where Americans wouldn't say please because Americans tend to say please for pleading, for sounding desperate or sounding bossy. So in ordering things in a restaurant, for example, an American will say, I'll have the something, and the British will say, please may I have something.
Right.
And it's not that the British is necessarily more polite. It's just the way they do it. On the other hand, Americans say thank you about twice as much as British people do. So we're both doing polite things. We're just doing them in different ways. An example of that would be if you offer me a piece of cake, in America I might say yes, thank you. But in Britain I'd have to say yes, please. So we're using the same words for slightly different effects, but we're all being polite in the way we know how to be polite.
I know my wife and I are certainly among them, but there are many in the United States who are Anglophiles, who watch a lot of British television, who listen to the BBC radio with some degree of frequency. How much of that do you think is a result, I'm sure it varies from person to person, of these little linguistic differences and those being just kind of moments of pleasure and you know, a pleasant disorientation, so to speak?
I think people really enjoy that kind of thing, but I think we have especially more patience for it or enjoyment of it when it's British. You know, there's this sort of idea of Britain as being cool or as being educated or as being lots of other things. So, you know, we do, those of us who like to watch things from different places do enjoy that aspect of it. You always learn a little bit. You always wonder a little bit when you watch something and they're using different words. But I just noticed that we do that a lot with British, but we don't seem to do this with, say, you know, New Zealand or Canada.
Right.
You know,
there's
a certain cachet that Britain has for Americans.
So having lived there for a while, tell us the truth. Are they cooler and more educated?
No.
Okay. Drat.
That's the thing that you have to get used to is that, you know, British people are just people. And, you know, the education, the picture that we get of Britain in America is usually sort of upper class Britain. You know, if you watch Downton Abbey or
right.
if you watch Sherlock or if you listen to BBC broadcasters, you know, you're not hearing people on the street talk. You're hearing a sort of upper refined kind of speech that comes from certain schools and certain places. Whereas, you know, in everyday life, there's a huge variety of ways that people speak and a huge variety of personalities and a huge variety of levels of education and intelligence, just like in America.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
Coming to theaters for 3 days only. Patterns of Evidence, The Moses Controversy.
The Lord said to Moses, write this in a book.
A new documentary follows investigative filmmaker Timothy Mahoney's faith-affirming journey throughout the Middle East in search of scientific evidence that Moses wrote the first books of the Bible.
So the question is the Bible a literal story of God acting in history?
Patterns of Evidence, The Moses Controversy. In theaters March 14th, 16th, and 19th only. For tickets, go to patternsofevidence.com/Moses.
I started going cold turkey. Well, at least when I'm in the car.
I know I shouldn't do it, but it's so hard to stop. That's why I hide it.
I do it all the time. I stopped by locking it in my glove compartment.
My friend used to do it way too much. Now I turn it off when we're in the car.
My solution is simple. I just don't do it.
There are lots of ways to stop yourself and others from texting and driving. How will you stop? Tell us at stoptextstoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Facebook and YouTube have removed the video of a terrorist walking into a mosque and opening fire. Facebook officials say police alerted them to the video on their platform shortly after the live stream started, and they quickly removed it. President of the Security Studies Group, Jim Hansen, on this terrorist attack.
It's horrific. It's hard to even imagine the mentality that decides I want to not just slaughter a bunch of people because of my obscene beliefs, but I want to broadcast that to the world in the hopes of creating a race war, which was his avowed goal. And I think it's horrific.
President Trump, with his first presidential veto, the veto deals with the congressional rejection of his border emergency declaration. The House and Senate passed resolutions of disapproval this week. It's unlikely that the House and Senate have votes that would override the president's veto. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take?
fish oil, or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you. We'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-399-6392. 1-800-399-6392. That's 1-800-399-6392.
And now, it's the news.
We're speaking with Lynn Murphy. She is the author of The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. Now that you've lived for quite a while in England yourself, how many aspects of British English have you adapted into your personal mode of speech?
Well, I like to say that my accent lives in Atlantis because I was mistaken for British the other day in Ithaca, New York. So, you know, it's because I pronounce my T's rather more crisply than I used to. Right. I just said rather more, that sounded pretty British.
Right.
Some of my vowels are sort of halfway between, and there are a lot of words that I've just come to say in the British way, either because I want to be understood, so I had, you know, it's easier to get my sandwich if I say tomato rather than tomato when I order it.
Right.
But also because sometimes the argument that ensues if I use the Americanism is just too much to bear.
Right.
Or not the argument, the mockery. So, you know, something like, I'll say herb now instead of herb for things like
right.
parsley. Because if I don't, I have to go through a whole spiel with whoever
you, you have to identify yourself, where do you come from, the whole conversation. You're obliged almost to a two-minute conversation under the best of circumstances.
Yeah, and it's often, you know, you Americans, why do you say it that way? Why do you say it wrong?
Right,
and,
okay.
You know, I don't want to get into that because it's not wrong, it's just American.
Exactly. So to smooth the way, you kind of
do it. Situation.
Right, right. How many of these differences have we picked up and adapted? I notice especially, it seems to me that there are a few, and no specific ones occur to me now, but there are certain British modes of speech that have been adapted, especially in big cities among younger folks in the U.S., and I'm sure that must be the case on the other side of the pond as well. How much is that happening that you notice?
Well, it happens all the time. It happens much more in the America to Britain direction because of that exposure to American television and such. But also, there are a lot more Americans than there are Brits, you know, so there's more language, more American language being heard in the world these days than British. So a lot goes over there, and there's a lot of backlash to it. When British words come over to America, either they're seen as something a little bit pretentious, you know, they'll be cool in some circles but not others, so to say a queue rather than standing on the line, or to use the sort of super British words like gobsmacked.
Yes.
That's sort of cute. Other things just come in under the radar. So, you know, for instance, in the 2008 elections, all of a sudden people were vetting
right.
candidates and vetting people for the Supreme Court. And that was something that came over from British racing slang. And I don't think most people who started using the word knew or started reading the word knew that it was coming over from Britain. Or when children suddenly started going missing instead of vanishing. I don't think most people
right.
realize that was coming over from Britain. But there are lots of things that do that.
I don't think that a whole lot of people prior to the, at least I remember it from 2003, and it's sort of recurred in the wake of the controversies surrounding President Trump, that the word dossier much came up with in American English. But I certainly remember that being around a lot in the media for the first time around the lead up to the Iraq war, given the dossier that was compiled by the Blair government, and then again with regard to Christopher Steele. That in particular seems to be a Britishism, or a more frequently heard word in British at any rate. So there certainly is a lot of that that interaction.
Yeah, you get a lot of that, I think, because the media is very mixed. You know, British mm-hmm. media people and you know, the reporters who are working in Washington, they're all mixing. And
right.
they're getting information from each other, and so it's really easy for information and for words to pass that way.
Absolutely. And one of our other guests this week is Catty Kay, and she is a prime example of that cross-filtration. We're speaking with Lynn Murphy. She is the author of The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. I suppose another product of the mass media may be that the number of differences between the two branches of the mother tongue have been reduced. Have you noticed that over the course of your exposure to British English?
Well, I think the British press is very sensitive about this point, that American words are coming over and that there's not going to be a difference anymore. And, you know, there's some of that. There's, you know, if you speak in business speak, you know, there's a lot that goes back and forth between the two, and there's a lot of influence of American business speak on British business and that sort of thing. At the same time, when words come over from one place to another, they very often change. And so, for example, fries, French fries, has gone over to
right.
Britain. And, you know, people say, oh, but we say chips. Except if you look at what people do with the word fries there, they only use it for the skinny kind like you'd get at McDonald's. And the ones that are more traditional British ones are chips. And so you can see the language specializing when it moves and doing interesting things.
Do you suppose that UKIP will advocate a limit on the number of American words that can enter the country at any point in the near future?
UKIP is interesting because, of course, they started as an anti-Europe
right.
organization. So they sometimes sort of try to show allegiance to America, and especially to certain brands of politics
right.
in America. And I loved UKIP had a they had a demonstration, and there was a man holding a poster that said, UKIP wants you, and it had a picture of Uncle Sam on it. And I don't know if they're coming or going, you know,
right.
from their relationship with America.
Well, I'm not sure either, given that their former leader, Nigel Farage, has probably one of the most recognizably French names imaginable. So
yeah, and his wife is German or Russian or something like that. So, they're a funny group.
Yes, they are. And you know, two funny languages, but I do revel in the difference, you know, let alone, and there's a whole different set of subjects we can get into with accent alone, and it's something else that I'm sure, having lived in other Commonwealth countries, that you notice as well. But the wording and the phrasing is something that I've always been fascinated with, and I really appreciate you taking the time to kind of flesh that out with us today. We've been speaking with Lynn Murphy, again, author of the blog Separated by a Common Language, and also the author of The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. Lynn, thanks so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
I'm Will Flitzer in the Situation Room, and you're listening to Now It's the News with Derek Blair.
For more information on Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com.
Are you enjoying this latest stock market roller coaster ride? You've worked too long and too hard to let market volatility and a tired old spend down strategy rob you of your retirement savings. David J. Scranton, founder of Sound Income Strategies, has dedicated his entire career to educating baby boomers how to avoid becoming prey to market volatility and the retirement spend down trap. To teach you how to get off the roller coaster and transform a potential retirement spend down into retirement income, David's now offering free copies of his latest book, Return on Principle, 7 Core Values to Help Protect Your Money in Good Times and Bad, to the first 1,000 boomers to respond to this message.
To receive David Scranton's best-selling book, Return on Principle, call 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. That's 866-913-1234.
Investment advisory services offered through Sound Income Strategies, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisory firm.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody just...
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. Today we're speaking with Jessica Bruder. She is the author of Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century. Jessica, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, the open road, it used to be something that Americans aspired to, getting out there, traveling across the country, traveling in an RV, maybe even living in one. It seemed to be a promise of freedom. But your investigation that you conducted and written up in this book really seems to be the opposite. It seems to be what people are doing on the way down as opposed to doing on the way up.
Yeah, it's funny. Whenever I saw an RV, back before I started working on this book project, I assumed that the occupants were probably the last of the great pensioners, you know, enjoying their golden years on some secure savings and, you know, going to see everything from Old Faithful to Niagara Falls and just, you know, writing postcards along the way. And it just seemed like this really just charmed existence. And while those people, by all means, are still out there, they've been joined by a whole new group of folks who have really been battered around by the economy, particularly in a society where we still have, you know, $7.25 is our federal minimum wage and housing costs keep going up. And for a lot of people, That's put them in a pretty untenable situation, for which going mobile has, has kind of been the valve that releases some of the pressure.
I certainly see people in my neck of the woods, and I live in southern Oregon, who use RVs or trailers as basically their in-law unit. I mean, this is their plan for retirement or to help their parents. And I think it seems to me that's something born of economic necessity also. How have some of the people that you've talked to made the decision that, I can't afford a home anymore, and this is what I'm going to do instead?
Yeah, I mean, the stories are as unique as the people themselves, but for a lot of people, in general, 2008 was a wake-up call. But for people in particular who are on the brink of retirement and suddenly faced, without having time to make it up, losing their savings, possibly losing their 401ks, losing the equity in their homes that they plan to retire on, it was really a particularly dire blow. So I met people out on the road who had, again, lost all of those things, and some of them had had pretty high-profile jobs during their main careers, and I also met people who had been caught on the low-wage treadmill and had never been able to put away enough to retire. And, you know, meanwhile, we live in a culture where pensions have been replaced with 401ks. In the 80s, 401ks were cynically marketed as instruments of financial freedom, while really taking the risk off of the shoulders of the employer and moving it over to the worker. And I think that's been kind of a disaster. So we've got all these factors that have people getting out on the road from different economic strata.
We're speaking with Jessica Bruder. She is the author of Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century. What is day-to-day life like for these folks? And is it actually less expensive than what the alternatives are?
I believe it can be less expensive. People envision that folks living this lifestyle are constantly in motion, and that's actually not true. Hmm. Often it's about getting to where you need to be and staying there for a while. Often they drive less than commuters in urban areas do. So for many people, there are thousands of employers who hire these folks over the country, from Amazon hiring them to do warehouse work, which can involve walking 15 miles on a concrete floor on a day, to Texas oil fields that hire them as gate guards, to the annual sugar beet harvest that hires them to work as ground crew, shoveling beets and doing some other pretty tough work on 12-hour shifts, to campgrounds and national parks all over the country. So that's where you'll find these people, is doing these jobs. They are tough jobs. They typically do not pay very well. However, they are one small area of the workforce in which ageism does not seem to be a factor. They are taking all warm bodies and all comers. So a lot of people are working those jobs, and when they're not, they are going financially dormant the best they can. Sometimes they're on public lands where they can camp for free or cheap. Often I see people using solar panels to generate their own electricity because the cost of that technology has come down so incredibly within recent years and put it within reach of a very wide audience. So that's some of the stuff that they're up to.
You know, I hate to draw the parallel, but it kind of seems like you've created a latter-day version of the Grapes of Wrath here. I mean, there's basically a motorized itinerant a class that's burgeoning in America, and that it seems on the face of it that it can't be good.
I think it's pretty challenging, and one of the big differences between these folks who are out on the road now related to economic circumstances and people who were out in the aftermath of the Great Depression, in my mind, is the post-Depression folks always envisioned reintegrating with mainstream society. So everybody was just figured, you know, this is a temporary anomaly, things are going to get better, and I'll be back in. And meanwhile, today, I don't think people believe that the cavalry is going to come, that things are going to change, that what is starting to feel like a long emergency, you know, in everything from our economy to the climate to just the overarching situation of, you know, how we're going to make it in the world. I don't think people feel like we're going to return to the old quo. I think the idea that we might seems quite clear to them. So most of the people I met were really planning to do this for the long haul, and that was something that surprised me, but it makes sense now.
It's really incredible. Maybe it's more akin to Mad Max than it is to the grapes of wrath. Because I mean, the grapes of meth. Like, what's the ultimate end here? I mean, how does somebody live out their life in a situation where at some point they're not going to be able to drive? And if we are as a society, and hopefully our leaders realizing that there is a growing group of people who are turning to this because there's no economic alternative, what are we going to end up with? A bunch of people driving around filling the roads and with fires in oil barrels to light the chiaroscuro. What's the end game here?
Oh, I wish I knew what the end game was, but I think the trend will continue to grow, and I also think the crackdown on it is going to keep growing. Right now, we have a widespread wave what people are worriedly referring to as the criminalization of homelessness. There's also been a crackdown in the national parks. I just got another email yesterday talking about how people who live full-time in their vehicles are being hustled off the land and sometimes not even given the rights that, you know, every person visiting this public land is entitled to in terms of staying there, which is upsetting to me. And at the same time, you know, places where these people gather, I started hanging out with them in 2013, and the numbers are just swelling. The numbers are absolutely swelling. And, you know, there's an interest in the whole tiny house movement and chic minimalism, but people never talk about the fact that economic factors actually may be shaping even those factors. And I think there's a lot more of that going on than we realize.
This is an outcropping of a larger problem, which is that we don't have affordable housing in this country, and certainly in places like the San Francisco Bay Area, where there are people working for enormous companies and often well-paid people who are in this situation that still can't afford basic housing.
Yeah, I met people who were pushed out of the Bay Area when I believe they were in like a manufactured housing park. And, you know, that was swept away for luxury condos, and suddenly those people were living in a van because there was really nowhere else they could afford.
Yeah.
I met a guy also from the Bay Area who had been a San Francisco cab driver for many years, planned to retire on the value of his medallion, but got pushed out by Uber, found his medallion was no longer worth a dime, and is also living in a van. So it's really quite striking to see the situations that have gotten these people out on the road.
Yeah. Maybe Tom Joad is out there somewhere, and maybe before he loses the ability to keep driving, he and a few other folks in a similar situation can get together and do something about it, because ultimately, I don't know if there's any other alternative. Jessica Bruder, she is the author of Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century. Thank you so much for talking with us about this, and thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks for caring about these people and their stories.
Happy trails. Happy trails.
That's all the time we have this week on Now It's the News. Now It's the News was created and produced by Derek Blair. For more information, go to nowitsthenews.com, follow us on Twitter at nowitsthenews, and until next week, I remain yours truly, Derek Blair.
Happy trails!
Mike Hewitt here. Truly, what will be the philosophy of government in the next generation? Not the left, but the extreme left. Has a whiskey grip on all levels of education in the United States. We pay more per student than any other country in the world, and what we get in return is indoctrination rather than education. We raise children to have reverence for teachers and professors, yet many of those educators are bent on a narrative of countercultural nonsense, identity division, and hardline socialism. Differing opinions aren't welcome. Tolerance and equality apply if you agree with them. Have you heard the craziness spewing from taxpayer-funded education? students driving themselves into mortgage-sized debts for a curriculum full of propaganda, we have a problem that demands our attention. Find the Mike Hewitt Show on Facebook and tell us what you think.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump's National Security Advisor John Bolton's reaction to two mosque shootings in New Zealand that left 49 people dead and wounded more than 40 others during prayer service.
We're obviously greatly disturbed by this, what seems to be a terror attack, this hate crime in New Zealand. We've been in touch with our embassy overnight. We're still getting details. The State Department and others are following up on it. We're very concerned. We're going to cooperate with the New Zealand authorities to the extent we can, if there's any role that we can play. But we're obviously following the events there very closely.
President Trump is set to deliver remarks from the White House this afternoon. The White House has been tight-lipped as far as what the president will be talking about, although it's expected he will discuss vetoing a congressional rejection of his border emergency declaration. This is USA Radio News.
We alarm our houses, and we alarm our cars. But when it comes to your personal information, it can be tough to know when something isn't right. That's where Discover Card can help. Now, we'll send you an alert if we find your Social Security number on any one of thousands of risky websites. And this service is free for card members. Just sign up online. It's our way of looking out for you, not just your account. Learn more at discover.com/freealerts. Limitations apply.
Mike Lindell, the creator of MyPillow, is a sleep genius. He creates things to make your night's sleep better. He created the new Giza Dreams bed sheets. He started by using the world's best cotton grown in the Mediterranean, and it's ultra-soft, breathable, and extremely durable. Now, if you go to MyPillow.com, use promo code USA when you click on the Giza Dreams sheet special, you get 30% off and free shipping. 30% off and free shipping when you go to MyPillow.com.
The party's over for some Louisiana taxpayers who got refunds twice as large as they expected. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes explains.
The state of Louisiana accidentally paid double refunds to 66,000 taxpayers, totaling $26 million. Louisiana's Division of Administration, discovering the mistake a few days ago, now trying to get the extra money back. Most of the refunds were sent by direct deposit, and the state's now contacting banks to try to reverse those overpayments, but that's complicated. Louisiana's telling people who got double refunds not to spend the money. If they do, they're going to have to pay it back. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Social media may be responsible for increased mental health issues among teenagers. A new report found that the amount of U.S. teens and young adults who experienced mental distress, depression, and suicidal thoughts or actions rose significantly over the past 10 years. This is USA Radio News.
America's built and based on liberties and freedoms. Liberty HealthShare brings that to healthcare. The liberty of choosing your own doctor. The liberty of choosing your own hospital. Liberty HealthShare makes healthcare affordable to millions of Americans. Ignite your liberty. Sharing plans starting at $199 for a single, $399 for a couple, and no matter how big the family, only $529. That's $529 for the entire family. To learn how you can save, go to lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com.
Recapping one of our top stories, mosques around the country have beefed up security after the terror attack in New Zealand. U.S. Ambassador to New Zealand, Scott Brown.
This peaceful country, as you noted, is shocked, certainly came out of left field earlier today on a Friday, and it's now Saturday morning at 1:17 a.m., and, you know, more to follow tomorrow. Obviously, they caught the guy, one of the guys. Maybe there's more. They're going to do the deep dive as we would do back home. And, you know, we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Regarding New Zealand's actions after this terrorist attack, Brown tells Fox News.
They've always been very diligent and vigilant on their terror. Even though they have a natural border, the ocean, they still know that there are a lot of things happening here, whether it's ISIS or human drug and child trafficking. So they're on it. They work very hard at it. As a Five Eyes partner, they certainly have the ability to do it and do it well. And I've been very impressed with the response, the quick response of the police force and the Prime
right.
Minister's team. So there's more to follow, obviously, tomorrow, and we'll learn more about who this person was and what made what him and or them tick.
Millions of Irish Americans and the Irish at heart are getting ready to celebrate St. Patrick's Day this Sunday. There's some big parades even being planned, including the nation's oldest in New York City, where more than 1 million spectators will line the streets. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.